Thank you guys. Such a wonderful refresh to the day to have your music pervade our hearts in this space. Thank you so much. Thank you, Cherie and Mike, and to my wife. You put the power in that power suit, let me tell you. I can't let it go. I gotta fight back. Good morning, y'all.
Good morning.
Can we just take a deep breath in and let it out? Because that went by fast. Summer's over. Tomorrow's Labor Day. I mean, I guess summer's technically over on September 21st, 22nd, depending how you look at it. But those with parents, it's over. Fall break is a nice, refreshing reset. Or fall is a summer break. It's a refreshing reset for parents, for people with kids. And when I was younger, I never really understood that line from that famed Johnny Mathis song. It's beginning to look a lot like Christmas. The line is, "And mom and dad can hardly wait for school to start again." And I fully get that now. I really do. It resonates. It resonates deep within. But on the real, you know, the passage of time is bittersweet. Goes by so fast often, so often, and we're seemingly trying to cram so much into it. We're moving forward, just going forward, trying to achieve the next thing, get that done, do this, do that, that we forget to stop, to take reprieve, to breathe and look inward and see what's really going on. You know, using the garden as a metaphor for our spirit and our lives, you know, we don't tend to the inner soil. Sometimes we don't pull up the roots or weed out what needs to go and make space for that which wants to, that which needs to come in. And I don't know about you all, but this summer for me and my family was about letting go, about accepting change, you know, letting go of what we thought the idea of a big, long family trip should look and feel like, letting go of a friendship, a relationship that no longer, you know, fulfilled or suited either parties. It was no longer symbiotic. And ultimately, saying goodbye to our beloved Corgi Hank. And change can be viewed as hard. It can be emotional. It can bring up turmoil. And all that is felt in the body. It can be. But change is also a good thing. It can be viewed as a good thing because it always keeps coming. It never stops. It's relentless. And reframing that, it's the one thing you can count on. In this world of tumult and divide and just cacophony of energies bouncing back and forth off each other, change is the one thing that you can rely on. And it comes in, and it's like a marker. It gauges the temperature of where you're at. Are you using this change to fortify your construct or your positions of rigidity? Are you using it to augment your feelings of lack consciousness or victimhood? Or are you using it to bless and welcome that change, even if that change is viewed as the end? You know, the passing of Hank was a big deal for our family. He's been in our family for 12 and a half years. He was our, Leah and I's first baby. He was our fur baby. He was a miracle dog. I've talked about him before in a couple of my talks, and he was diagnosed with stage 4 cancer almost 5 years ago. And he surprised everybody, all the oncologists, everybody. He lived another 5 years. And I'm so grateful. My boys got to have a relationship with him. And I'm just so grateful for that. But divine timing is always right. It's always right on time. And he passed when we were actually on a family trip, our last summer trip to Los Angeles to see some family friends for a long weekend. And just so happened, that was the same weekend that Hurricane Hillary was coming in. And so we decided to truncate, to shorten that trip and leave a day early. The airlines were giving us free changes of flights. And so we just opted for that. We weren't worried about Hillary, but we didn't want to be stuck there for another 3 or 4 days, you know, looking at the landscape of the airlines these days. Who knows? So we didn't want to be there for another 3 or 4 days, so we left early. And about an hour before we were supposed to leave that day earlier, my wife gets a call from her mom, and immediately there's tears on the other end of the line, and I just intrinsically knew it was about Hank. You know, he had lived a good long life, but 12 and a half, it's a long life for a dog. And she informed us that he just went over, she let him into our house, she was watching him while we were gone, and he just took a nap and didn't wake up. And she was pretty emotional, and luckily we had a friend that came by. He's well-versed in these kind of things, and he took him, and he kept him on ice and preserved him for us. Because even as much as I was willing to accept his life here ending, you know, you're always remiss that you don't get a physical one last goodbye. And so the next day, I made it my charge to do this, to have a ceremony to honor his life. And I went out and started digging. And to my wonderful surprise, our oldest son, Ford, wanted to help. And at first, I was kind of skeptical, but I didn't want to resist it. I was like, you know what? This could be a very teachable, good moment for him. Because this is a rite of passage. For anyone that's got kids, you've got animals, at some point, they're going to pass. And it's a great chance to refresh your idea and their ideas about the passage of time and ultimately death. And so he came out there and helped me put him in the ground, helped me dig. And I was just so starkly pleased by the actual physical act of doing that, of honoring his life and honoring his body and making that space for him. And so when we came out there, it was time to do the eulogy. I was nervous to actually get him out of the bag because I was like, you know, I've got a lot of trauma around death. Both my parents, when they passed, they didn't look so good physically, but I was resolved to letting everyone see him. And we opened the bag, and it looked like he just took a nap. He looked great. And I was like, you know what? If I get to live as long as he did in human years and I get a pass away during a nice mid-afternoon nap, then I consider that a win. And so we put him in the ground and we buried him with a bunch of treats and food scraps because the one thing Hank loved more than anything was food. And if we can find that passion and live it on the regular like he did and just let it kill us, then I judge that has been a life well lived. We put the dirt on him, the sunset, and we said some prayers. We all talked about what he meant to us, and it was just a wonderful thing. And I was able to tell the boys that, you know, this doesn't mean the end. Energy cannot be destroyed. It cannot be. It just changes shape. And so we put him in the ground next to a stone pine that I had planted about 5-6 months ago, and I told them he's going to continue to nourish this pine like he nourished us. And it's that ability to accept change with open arms, with a non-resistance, to refresh our rigidity. And we can do that by adopting activities, by adopting tangible things, just like putting him in the ground, things we can do here to help us get in touch with, to refresh, to give new life to the spirit that is inside of us. You know, it's all around us, whether it is meditation, yoga, a brisk walk, or coming here in the morning and doing the kirtan chanting that we offer before church. All these things help us get right with our spirit, help us refresh whatever needs refreshing, because a lot of times we get caught up in our stories and what we tell ourselves, and we forget that we have emotions. And emotions don't have us, and we take a ride. And if we have the ability to do these things that offer us the ability to get centered and to create separation and space between these energies, then it's a good thing. Because there's a stark difference, such a stark difference between observing the world around you and absorbing those energies you come in contact with. Because a lot of times, they're negative. They can be detrimental to your wholeness, your well-being, and the knowledge that God is allness, the oneness, and the goodness in our lives. You know, revered Unity teacher and New Thought leader, Eric Butterworth said that you are a whole creature possessed of a wonderful mind which is yours to direct. Your thoughts are not produced by conditions, much as they appear to be. They are shaped by the way you choose to deal with persons from a high or low perspective. The world may say this. People may say this. Situations may reveal this. But the one who is strong in the mastery of their own consciousness will say these things. That's what you think. That's fine. But I choose to think differently. I choose to listen to the inward voice, and therefore I am poised and I am centered in the Christ mind. And nothing can disturb the calm and peace of my soul. Famed Chinese philosopher has some great ancient wisdom. He says, men are born soft and supple. Dead, they are stiff and hard. Plants are born tender and pliant. Dead, they are brittle and dry. Thus, whoever is stiff and inflexible is a disciple of death. Whoever is soft and yielding is a disciple of life. The hard and stiff will be broken. The soft and supple will prevail. And Bruce Lee said, let's all be water. Be water. And what that means is be malleable. Have the ability to go with the flow, regardless of the situation, to just fit in seamlessly and go with it. Don't fight it. You know, and adopting these practices, just a conscious check-in to realize that, hey, I'm in here. You're in here. And be okay with it. That's what we need to aspire to do, because oftentimes we view life as a zero-sum game, right? If this happens or if that happens, I'll never be okay. I'll never be able to find joy, to find happiness again. And if you live like that, if you believe like that, then you've already been bitten by the snake. You've already gotten sick. Now don't bring those dark clouds into your life. Unless they got rain, because we could use some rain right here, right now. It's pretty dry out there. Needs refreshing. My wife and I, we try to meditate every morning. We set an alarm. And sometimes the kids beat that alarm. It's like, what are you going to do? You know, good intentions. But every morning we do go outside and we have coffee together in the chicken coop before it gets too hot. And the chickens have grown, and so has the ire and defensiveness of Tiberius, our lone rooster. He has adopted this habit of wanting to attack me when I come into the coop. Well, not just me, but all male energy around. He comes in and attacks my oldest son and I. And I'll be honest, for a former city slicker like myself, it was pretty unsettling when it first started happening. His tactical advance is very interesting. I judge the military would love to have this anti-gravity technology, because what he does is you come in there and he gets all weird and he jumps at you moving forward with his claws, but at the same time his body is seemingly moving backwards and he's got this crazy like velociraptor look at me and he's got his wings flapping and I'm like, oh my God, it's very unsettling. Very unsettling. And I'm just trying to come out here and enjoy my coffee. And now this chicken's attacking me. I just want to hang out with my wife and start my day in a nice, refreshing way. And I started to get really frustrated. I got really frustrated with him and angry. And I was like, this is not the refreshing cup of coffee I wanted. And I was like, why is he doing this? And the answer is because. Because he is a chicken. He's a rooster. And he's fulfilling his biological prophecy, you know? And I get it. He wants to protect his chickens. He wants to protect his ladies. The problem is he thinks my wife's one of them. And, you know, and there's no eye of the storm for chickens. There's no men's group for roosters. So he's working. He can't work through his insecurities. He's doing the best he can. But it's me. I'm the one that's struggling now. I've got my energy all messed up, and I want him to behave the way I want him to behave. I want to come out there and have a peaceful cup of coffee. I want to go out in the stoop and the coop and hang out. And I can't. I can't, because it's a fallacy. I have to refresh. You know, life does not act the way you want it to. And neither do chickens. Neither do roosters. And I realize I want peace. I want him to be peaceful, but I have to be the peace, right? I have to be the peace. I'm stuck in the eye of the storm of misperception, what Reverend and Uni teacher Gary Simmons says, because I'm creating this conflict. I have this idea of how things should be, and when you have this conflict, you separate from reality. You constrict. You tighten up. You don't extend. You recoil, and you separate yourself from the perceived threat. And while that might, you know, it might serve you in the moment, over time, it's just strengthening those neural pathways. It's just strengthening the initial threat, the initial trigger response. And it doesn't do you any good. And instead of getting mad at it, instead of being frustrated, you know, I had this huge aha moment. Tiberius is a metaphor. He's a metaphor for my life, for all my negative thoughts, for all my formidable fears. All these things that I hold inside of me don't serve me. And instead of fighting with it, instead of wanting to kick it and throw it and getting mad, you got to walk up and you got to just pick it up. Tiberius can't hurt me. He physically can't hurt me. And I was getting all drained, not physically, because it's not hard. It's not hard to pick it up. It's not hard to pick up the chicken and hold it, you know, assert a little bit of dominance over it. We forget we're in here. So you have to play the evolutionary game a little bit. Treat it like a baby. Just pick up your fears. If you are able to sit there and be with it just for a moment, allow them to express and realize they don't really have any power over you. They will rest. And therefore, you can rest. You know? There's a lot. You know, and I guarantee you, after we have this little tussle, Tiberius isn't going on with his day getting all frustrated. Like, I can't believe you did this. You did that. He's going on. And he's being a rooster. He's doing what he's got to do. He's living in the present moment. I'm the one that's walking around getting all upset and flustered. Man, I can't believe I let a chicken upset me, a rooster upset me, you know? And I know probably a lot of you out there are saying, why don't you just, you know, some of you older gentlemen, why don't you get rid of the rooster? You know? Get rid of him. I mean, you could. I thought about that. But you got to have non-resistance. In love, you've got to accept because something worse will pop up. We know that. We get rid of, cut the head off one fear. Another one's going to come up underneath, a bigger, more scary one. You've got to be calm. You got to love it. You got to carry it and nurture it. That and my wife won't let me. I think she's projecting some of her grief of Hank onto Tiberius. I come out there every day, and now she's sitting with him. Having her call. I'm not lying. This is not like a bit I'm doing. This is real life, folks. I've been replaced by cocky rooster. I mean, that's why they call it cocky for a reason. What I'm trying to say is don't wrestle with the rooster. Find the rest. Don't wrestle to find rest. I mean, the word rest is right in the middle of wrestle. Just like last time I talked, the word I is in the middle of the word faith. Do you guys see a recurring theme here? I mean, I like there's something to that. I like to find that. You know, this lexicon that we use, there's power in words. There's meaning. And we can learn a lot from these animals. We can learn a lot from the animal kingdom because he's not carrying this burden. He goes on being a chicken, like I said, being a rooster. I'm the one that's messed up. And, you know, if wild animals in the wild have a stressful encounter, if they survive, they go and they rest. They recalibrate. And they go on being in the moment. They have that intrinsic intelligence to give that to themselves. When they're sick, when they're worried, when they're upset, they rest. And they go out and get back at it. You know, except for domestic pets, no animal suffers from anxiety. No animals carry PTSD. They're too busy living in the moment. We can learn a lot from these animals. Being one with divine presence, it doesn't require this extra effort. You know, a lot of times things that are really simple appear hard. They're not. Relaxing, loosening our grip, and widening our view of life while not focusing on outcomes can be the refreshing reset that we all need to live a nourishing, refreshed, and fulfilled life. If you're wrestling with the proverbial metaphorical rooster, if it's interfering with your recharge time, you know, are you so worried? Is the mind so adamant about procuring things you think you need that it wants, that you're living in a constant level of stress to some degree? I mean, look inward. Is that true? We all do it. We all do it. Gary Simmons says, either you're the way of God or you're in the way of God. And that is the cold, hard facts. The universe isn't against us. The universe is for us. And we're able to see this clearly when we remain in principle. You know, truth principles don't change over time. And they're the same regardless of culture or place. They're universal principles that God is in all things. And they remain true for the human race even as knowledge grows or ebbs. We're the ones that get in the way. And non-resistance is the habit to nurture this, to nurture peace, centeredness, learning to quit wrestling with the rooster. But before I'm able to do that, before we're able to do that, we have to really stop wrestling and judging our humanness. You have to be okay with it. We're going to make mistakes. We're going to fall from grace sometimes. And, you know, there's that age-old, I guess it's an argument. It's, are we human beings having a spiritual experience or spiritual beings having a human experience? And I guess it's semantics, but I tend to fall in the camp of the latter. Because if you think about it, our bodies, these bodies, this biological machine is automated by this energy that we have. And the truth is that a lot of times these bodies give out before energy does, before spirit does. Energy cannot be destroyed. So it behooves us to take care of it while we're here. It behooves us to find a symbiotic relationship between this and this, to bring it together, to allow it to work symbiotically for our benefit. How many times do we use our spirituality as a bludgeon? How often do we beat ourselves and others up with it? You know, I should have been over this by now. I know better than this. Or I'm just so frustrated because I've been doing this spiritual thing for so long and things aren't showing up the way I want it to. It happens to us all, but we have to be the gatekeepers. We have to witness this because one negative thought can alter your mood, mess up your day. And if left unchecked, that can alter your temperament. You become the cynical, closed-off person. If left unchecked for a long time, if not refreshed, if your views aren't turned around and looked at, that becomes a personality. It's important. It's important to take care of yourself. It's important to love yourself. And I think a lot of us might have heard this story before, but I'm going to share it because the intricate details of it are so poignant and just so mind-blowing. I found this article, it's a 2019 article by Celia Acock in the online magazine, The Fountain. It's about the works of Dr. Masaru Emoto, who was a Japanese scientist who dedicated his life to studying water. Dr. Emoto's studies claim that thoughts, feelings, words, ideas, music, and even names affect the molecular structure of water and thus our physical reality. During his study, Dr. Emoto discovered that water droplets that had been repeatedly exposed to positive or negative words profoundly shaped the water's shape, color, and symmetry. His first experiment involved putting distilled water into small jars, writing a word or short phrase on a label, and then taping that label to each jar. The jars were then left overnight on their own. Some of these words had positive associations, such as self-love, beauty, passion, and happiness. Other jars had negative associations such as evil, hatred, or phrases such as, you disgust me. Each jar then had a small amount of water flash frozen in order to form crystals, which were then observed under a microscope. The results were astonishing. The positive words formed beautiful, symmetrical crystals that looked very similar to snowflakes, while the negative words were discolored, chaotic, and fragmented. His revolutionary findings were published in The Hidden Message in Water. However, Dr. Emoto's work was met with criticism, skepticism, and confusion. He then decided to take the experiments a step further and wanted to see what would happen to a large amount of water over an extended period of time. His famous rice experiment involved putting the same amount of rice in three different jars and then adding the same amount of distilled water into the jars. He then closed the jars and labeled each jar with a different word. The first jar, he labeled it with the phrase, "Thank you." The second jar with the phrase, "You're an idiot." And the third jar, I mean, how many times do we say that to ourselves? The third jar was left with a blank label. Every day for 30 days, he visited each jar and read aloud their corresponding label to the jar for 1 minute and tracked the changes in each jar over the month. By the end of the month, he had noticed that the water in the jar labeled "Thank you" had started to ferment, giving off a strong, pleasant aroma. The water in the jar that was labeled "You're an idiot" turned black with an unpleasant shape. The last jar with the blank label that had been ignored the entire time, it turned into a nasty green blue color as opposed to staying its original color. He concluded by that his findings were stating that water is a blueprint for our reality, and emotional energies and vibrations could change the physical structure of water. It is imperative to remember that water is life. About 70% of the human body and almost two-thirds of the world is made up of water. Therefore, everything happening around us, our thoughts, our attitudes, our behaviors, and our intentions are related to each other and can affect our emotions. So the takeaway and what I'm saying to you is this: talk kindly to yourself. Give yourself permission to love yourself. Do that on the regular. Take time to check in. The Buddha said, you yourself, as much as anybody in the entire universe, deserve your love and affection. And I think Philippians 4:8 brings this message home so clearly. Finally, brethren, whatever is true, whatever is honorable, whatever is right, whatever is pure, whatever is lovely, whatever is of good repute, if there is any excellence and anything worthy of praise, focus on these things. There is such an endemic cynicism that is prevalent in our world right now, probably now more so than ever, about ourselves, about our neighbors, about information, about our world. And so, quickly, I'd be remiss if I didn't share this story with you all. About 3.5 weeks ago, about a couple days after my last talk, I was at Home Depot with my two boys, and they're acting a fool, being loud, destroying stuff, knocking stuff off the walls, and I had kind of lost my integrity, and I just let them have it. I reprimanded them in public, and there was this gentleman that was knelt over by the trim section, and he popped up and looks at me, makes a beeline to me. I'm like, oh, man, really? I'm like, I don't got time for this. What's this guy going to say to me? He looks at me, and he says, don't let anyone tell you how to raise your kids. Don't let anyone tell you what to teach your kids, because it's your job, and you're doing a good job, and it's important. I was like, wow, wasn't expecting that. Okay. I was like, thank you. He's like, I was a teacher for 35 years, and I had to quit because of what the institutions wanted me to teach the kids. And that's a judgment, but I was sitting there, all right, this is an affirmation I'll take, because my wife and I just recently pulled our sons from public school and got them into a Waldorf offshoot. And sometimes we question our decision. I was like, well, thank you for sharing. He then proceeded to look deeper into my eyes and said, a little over a year and a half ago, you made a decision that affected your life and changed it for the good. Keep going. There's a lot to learn in it. I was like, about a little over a year and a half ago, I started speaking here. He continued, about a week ago, you had this really big crisis of faith, but you're okay. God wants you to know you're okay. That was when I went and saw the specialist about the thing on my tongue. And I was like, okay, Jim, you have my attention, sir. He proceeded, about 15 years ago, I had a near-death experience. I left my body, and I hovered above my world, and I went increasingly closer and closer to this warm, effervescent, all-encompassing light. And it was the most beautiful thing I ever experienced. I didn't want to leave, but I was told I had a mission to come back here and honor God's word and live that. And so I came back to my body. And when I saw you, God told me to come talk to you and tell you these things because you can handle it. So keep on the path. You're doing a good job. Never give up faith. And it was such a nice, refreshing reminder that God is indeed in all things and everywhere. So my loves, when that phone rings and it distracts you and you fall from these pillars of self-love, which you will, these habits you've created, you will fall probably many times. Get back on it. Don't give up, because stay open so you can hear the divine when it comes down to say hello. Let's take this and go into meditation. Let's take these thoughts, these ideas. Get comfortable in your seat and just whatever works for you, you know. Let's not be dogmatic. If you want to breathe, breathe. If you want to just sit there, focus on something, or just feel the blood rushing through your veins, your body existing, do that. But what I'd like you to, what I implore you to do, is to breathe into your heart. That energy, that radiant space that automates and gives us life. And I want you to think about that energy. I want you to view it as warmth, love, ever-present, inexhaustible. And I want you just to focus on that and imagine it, that energy getting bigger. Imagine it pervading all over your entire body. Imagine it filling the room. Send it to your neighbor. Send it to your loved ones that's far away. Send it to the world, because God knows we can use it. You yourself are capable of making change with every step, with every breath. We're all just resonant fields and vibrations. Let's focus on making these vibrations godly, good, pleasant, kind. Love yourself so you can love your neighbor. Love your neighbor so they can love theirs. And so on and so forth. Pay this love forward. Pay this goodness forward. And there is nothing that we shall ever want that is not here for us at our fingertips. We are God, and God is us. Take one more breath in, if you will. Breathe in that goodness. And let go of any and everything that does not serve you. Move forward in peace, my loves. And so it is.